Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast. I am your host, filled with energy on this beautiful Tuesday morning here in January. Joining me as always for 80 episodes, 80! Defied the odds when they said we wouldn't last 20 because of our huge egos and we would kill each other. That's right, the man from up north, the man with more collectibles than anybody on earth, and you can find them every weekend over at the Raynham Flea Market. The man who writes articles for all those magazines like Backstreet, Back Issue, Alter Ego, and of course, the Jack Kirby Collector. I'm not going to say one more thing except, hey, John, how are you?
What's going on, Mitchie? And let me just throw this out there, too. This coming summer, 2018, brand new retro fan that's coming from Tomorrow's Publishing, kind of based on old school toys and all that stuff. Yep, John Cimino is starting that one, too. I got a great article on the Mego Stretch Elastic Hulk history coming up in that bad boy. How you doing, Mickey?
Yeah, I like those magazines that have like photos and history of all the old comics and toys and things we used to have. It's like if you can't buy them again, why not get a magazine or a picture of it?
And we can throw this out there. You remember the script I wrote? It was a couple thousand. I think it was 3,000 words. I sent it to Mitchie.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And Mitchie threw in his 2 cents. And Mitchie was very helpful because there was a couple little things with dates. And then we won't tell them what, but a couple little dates in there, and Mitchie told me to add a little something, and I did. And so Mitchie is in there in spirit, too.
So is that one of those things you have to get only at your local comic shop, or do you go to tomorrows.com?
Yeah, you can get it at Tomorrow's, and it's going to be it's going to be at all the comic shops, but it's going to be focused on the toys, and the toys. I don't know exactly how it's going to be, but the toys, I know they interviewed some old school people. I can't really say exactly because I got to keep it on the down low, but it's going to have a lot of toys, the old school toys and all that stuff in there. So a lot of, and books and stuff. So it's going to be not really about the comics, but more about the merchandise and all that stuff.
Well, I know that our good buddy and birthday boy, Scott Martin, recently purchased from Tomorrow Publishing, the makers of Alter Ego and the Kirby Collector. He bought a book called Comic Book Fever. I don't know if you know. I was tempted to buy it too. It was $40.
Yeah, I didn't buy it because I have a little problem with the writer of that. What's his name? George something. Kahuri? Cool. He's a Spanish guy like me.
I'm looking right now. Does it say?
Look at his name.
Yeah, George Korg.
Okay, I have a problem with him, and I'm going to tell you this right now. He was bad to me because two years ago, I was writing an article for Back Issue on the Marvel merchandise catalogs, right?
And yeah. That's on the cover. Snyderman.
Exactly.
On the cover.
So I called him up. I contacted him to try to ask him a few questions because it was the history of I also interviewed Rick Vetch. Do you know that name? He's been drawing for comics for many years.
Vetch.
Yes.
Oh, I know him. He did a Star Wars book. Yeah.
Yeah, and Steve Bissett. Remember Steve?
Yeah,
Bissett?
Yeah. I know Steve Bissett, the Swamp Thing. Steve Bissett. Yeah.
Yeah. I took, because they both, it was them two who worked on those catalogs, all those catalogs. But Query, this guy, he actually, he was making that book, and in comic book creators, he interviewed Snyder a few months prior to my article coming out. So I contacted him because I just needed a couple of tidbits of information. He wouldn't give it to me. And he said, what right do I have? This is what this bastard said to me. What right do I have to be writing that article? And then I said, I was like, Jesus, I was put on to write that article. I was picked by Michael Urie to write that article. But he was pissed off about it because that book was coming out. So you know what they had to do? So what Michael had to do is, if you notice that article, I can't remember the Back Issue magazine it is at the top of my head. It was a Christmas issue. But after my article, there's a big ad for that book because he wasn't going to give Michael the information I needed unless he advertised that book, and because he was pissed that I was writing that article on the Marvel merchandise catalog. So I never bought that book, and George defriended me, and I'll tell you this right now, I don't like to have enemies in the system, but F that guy. I would never buy that book, and I know it didn't do that well, so good.
All right, well, we just happen to have...
Happy birthday, Scott. It's funny. Happy birthday.
Yeah, on that happy note, let's bring him out right now. Ladies and gentlemen, on the show, for the first time ever, is author George Corey, who's going to go head-to-head with John Cimino. No, he's not.
Oh, let's go. Oof. What an arrogant buddy. What an arrogant guy. I had nothing to do with anything.
Nobody's arrogant to our pal John Cimino. We don't want to hear that. Hey, I'm trying to come up with a topic for today, and for some reason on the top of my head, I'm thinking Ariel Ukla, Ride. That's right. Today's going to be talking about, I don't think we've talked about Thundar the Barbarian before on the show, have we?
Yeah.
So
a big article I wrote for the Jack Kirby Collector, I don't know if you remember, my Jack Kirby versus Alex Toth article I wrote, and a lot was mentioned on Thundar the Barbarian. And let me just throw this out there. If anybody has seen Thundar, was two seasons back in 1981, and it got canceled. It got canceled because it was too violent, and they were trying to do something ahead of its time. But it's one of the only times that Alex Toth and Jack Kirby worked together. Let me just throw it out there. Ukla the Mach, Ariel, and Thundar were designed by Alex Toth. He was first put on by Steve Gerber, who was the story director of that. Gerber, obviously, because it had the influences of Commandy, it had Star Wars, it had a lot of that sword and sorcery stuff going on at the time. But it was Alex Toth who was hired, because he was hired for all those cartoons back then. But he had to leave, so he only designed those characters, and then Gerber hired Jack Kirby, who was off of Marvel. Remember, he was kind of in limbo at that time. He came back to Marvel in the late 70s. It really wasn't that good. He did the Mad Bomb stuff, the 2001 Space Odyssey, and it wasn't panning out. He was kind of fading away, and Gerber was the one that hired him on during those linger years to get him into animation, which brought him to Thundar the Barbarian. And if you watch those cartoons, what is fantastic is you see Alex Toth in the original art, the original characters, but if you look at the background, you look at all the vehicles and all the enemies, you see Kirby all over that.
Well, one of the guests who was at Terrific Con, Connecticut's Terrific Comic Con at the Mohegan Sun last August of 2017 was Mr. Pesky Pasco, as he used to be known on the letters columns, and Julie Swartz used to break his stones. He was at Terrific Con, and he was also, not only was he one of the people involved with the show, he was one of the writers of many episodes, and his claim to fame in Thundar the Barbarian fame was coming up with the name of Ukla the Muck. And the way the story is, he was at dinner with Steve Gerber, and they were walking down the street in California, and they were trying to think of a name for the character, the giant Wookiee-like gorilla character, and they walked by a UCLA, University of Southern California, or whatever. No, I'm sorry, that's USC. Whatever. So UCLA, and they said, how about Ukla? And that's where the name Ukla the Muck comes from, UCLA. What are you going to do about
it? And Mitch, you want to know something funny? When my last tour that I did across America, when I was during my band days of Grimlock, one of the last bands we toured with was, they were called Ukla the Mach.
Really? See, it's all tied together.
Yeah,
figure. They made action figures years ago, and the only one I bought was Ukla. He's downstairs somewhere in the menagerie of plastic crap in my basement.
And let me throw this out there. I mean, I know people look for those episodes. If you go to the Warner Brothers site, the archives, they do sell it, because I got it right away, and they sell fully complete all 21 episodes, which I have in my hand right now, but you can go there, or you can always go on Amazon. I recommend it. If you watch this, even today, you can see, it's a little corny and some things, but you can see how ahead of the curve it was, and why it got canceled. Because of it didn't they kind of stretched what you could do on Saturday morning cartoons at that time.
It also ran on ABC, and once it got canceled on ABC, it shifted over to NBC and ran out a little bit there. Now, Ookla and Ariel, they lived in the future, and we know it was the future. It was on the Earth. It was a world of sword and sorcery magic along with science. It was like a Conan the Barbarian meets Star Wars, and our hero, Thundar, traveled the wastelands with a sun sword, correct? Wasn't that his weapon of choice?
Yes, and only he could use it properly, which was a knockoff of the lightsaber that was going on.
Correct.
But what was so cool about those shows, every episode, obviously Ariel, the pretty sorceress, was she was the most educated one of the group. But every time in every episode that they would go to a certain place, and she would describe New York City and what it used to be at the time, and what it was, and then they could be in California, and the backgrounds were great because you could see, like, you know, sometimes they'd fight at a theme park and it would be all kind of catastrophic and destroyed. But I have to admit, the beginning was great, and if anybody knows the beginning, it was 1999 that the rocket, it was a meteor that came between the moon and the Earth that kind of like...
I'm sorry, John, you are wrong, it is 1994, but go on.
Oh, okay, you're right, 1994, and then it was 3,000 years later...
It was set in the year 3,994.
Yes, so it was 3,000 years...
It was 2,000 years after, John, knowing my math.
Oh, 2000?
Yeah, because if it was 1994, and then the story took place in 3,994, that's 2,000.
But the funny thing is, and I'm sure nobody back in 1994 did this, because at that time, comics were not kosher, and all those those cheesy cartoons that happened in the 80s were not even looked upon, were frowned upon. But I remember doing this, Mitch, in 1994 when we were counting down. I remember where I was. I was in Northampton, Massachusetts, and I was touring at that time because the band started in 93. I remember saying, "Okay, when it turns 1994, the comet is going to hit, and it's going to be Thundar. Get ready!" And it never happened. I swear to God, in 1994, I waited. Cause that's how much I loved Thundar. Thundar is one of my favorite ever. Top five cartoons ever.
Wow. One of the other things you forgot to mention about this whole thing was Mark Evanier. Evanier was also involved with the show along with Steve Gerber.
Mark.
He's the one that recommended I'm bringing Kirby onto the program, little did you know. It says the series... Huh? I'm just reading right now some facts. The series was the creation of Steve Gerber. Gerber and friend Marty Pasco, I just said that, we're having dinner in the Westwood area of California, and he came across the UCLA campus, and Pasco quipped, "Why not call him Ookla?" Pasco is one of several screenwriters known for their work in comics, such as Roy Thomas and Jerry Conway, to contribute to the show. They weren't on it. They're just saying that they worked also on TV. And the other writers included Buzz Dixon and Mark Jones. And yes, you were right. Only Thundar, because of its magically enhanced ability, could pick up the hilt of the Sun Sword and make the Sun Sword work. And it ran from 1980 to 82 on ABC, and then it ran on NBC in 1983. So very odd that it switched.
But they weren't making any new episodes. It was in syndication at that time.
No. And then some of the things here that's notable for the Lords of Light, these are some of the things that Thundar would remark, kind of like his Great Caesar's Ghost or Great Scott. He would say Demon Dogs was a popular one. Lords of Light, I just mentioned. The Thundar...
Mitch, let me hold you for a second.
Go ahead.
I would recommend this. If you go on YouTube, because you said Lords of Light, there's a documentary that they put on one of those... cartoons of like the 70s and 80s. It's one of those anthology series they did, and it's on there. But you can go on YouTube, and it's a documentary on Thundar called The Lords of Light. I highly recommend it because it is so well done, and it's taken a serious turn, and it's a great look into the Thundar world.
Do you know the Thundar, the war cry? Yeah, that's correct. It's spelled here A A A A A A A H H dash E E Exclamation point. Whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll say that.
I've watched Thundar a million. It's one of my favorites, Mitch.
It says, Thundar's respect. It said, let me read here. Thundar, along with his friend Ookla, are largely unknowledgeable about the world and rely on Ariel's guidance, which you mentioned before. But Thundar is respectful of the knowledge gained. When once asked, okay, I'm going to ask you right now. Here's some Thundar the Barbarian trivia. When once asked what kind of man he was, what did Thundar reply?
What kind of man? I think he would say he's all man.
He said he was free.
Oh, free?
Yeah, free.
Oh, that's great. That's actually pretty cool, because let's remember, at the beginning, the starting was so good, and when it said one man breaks his
body. Yeah, he was a barbarian who was a slave to Sabian.
And you're like, that was, when you were a kid, that was awesome. So that's great.
It said he was freed by Princess Ariel and given the Sun Sword, which he uses as a weapon in his fight against evil wizards and other
villains. And he was always crazy about, like, people that were enslaved. And that was a big thing about Thundar. And he always went after those people. And those episodes were awesome. Mitch, do you have the series?
I do not. It only lives in my memory, like the Road Warrior.
Today, I'm telling you, you'll love it.
No, I know. It's one of those things that I go, well, you know, I should go out and buy it for 20-something bucks, and I'll watch it and never see it again or use it.
No. You might want to see it again. Look, that's something I recommend. You pay 20 bucks on comics, you're never going to...
Oh, I know. I know. So you heard it here first, people, that Mr. John Cimino is recommending that Thundar, the Barbarian, the complete show, is worth your $20-something dollars over on Amazon right now.
Yeah, and it's a four-disc set, and it, like I said, it's in my top five greatest cartoons ever.
Ariel, I'm reading about, Ariel's attire consisted of, amazingly, this is the same outfit that I'm wearing right now. Her attire consisted of knee-high boots and an open-back, leg-bearing cyan with yellow trim costume, which suggests a bathing suit. That's exactly what I have on right now.
Yeah, she was always sexy, but she was probably the powerfulest one of the group. But if her hands were bound, it's like she had to raise her hands to do her magic. Yeah. So you would always have to bind her. It had that Wonder Woman type effect. So that's how they kind of nullified her all the time. And, you know, Thundar and Ookla.
Thundar was voiced by voice actor Robert Ridgely. I don't know him. And it was narrated by Dick Tufeld. Henry Corden provided the voice of Ookla the Muck, along with such characters as the Karak Leader, Gemini, Vortex, Skullis, Captain Willows, and the Mutant Deputy. Interesting.
Well, see, let me tell you the reason why you don't know a lot of those guys, because Ruby Spears, that first produced those cartoons, they're the ones that left Hanna-Barbera and all that. They worked for them, but they wanted to do their own thing, so they had this subsidiary group, and they started Ruby Spears, so they had to get voice actors and stuff that weren't of the norm.
Yes, I'm reading the voice actor list. It's very interesting. Actors of the time included Joan Van Ark, Stacy Keach Sr., Chuck McCann, Nancy McKeon, who was on, what is that show with Michael J. Fox, Alan Oppenheimer, Michael Bell. Yeah, a lot of actors that you normally would not see. Calm down. The 21 half-hour episodes were produced, as you mentioned, by Ruby Spears Production, an animation house formed by former Hanna-Barbera head writers Joe Ruby and Ken Spears from October 80 to September 82. Despite its high ratings, the show was canceled, possibly due to the violent content.
Do I know my cartoons or not, Mitchie?
Was it very violent, John?
Well, for the time, that's why I'm telling you, if you watch it, you got to be like, oh my God. And it was, that's why we loved it as kids. When we were watching it, it was like, oh my God, it's brutal. Like, it's like, for the time, because you got to remember, this was coming out of the 70s where you had the Super Friends where people couldn't punch each other. They had to throw things at each other or just think of ways to fix up situations. It was always that way. This was kind of radically different. And I remember me and my brother watching it the first Saturday morning, and we were like, what the hell is this? This was awesome. And it was right before Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, so you know we were watching that.
No, it was. It mentions here that in September 28, 2010, the Warner Archive has the complete series on DVD in the Hanna-Barbera collection. Blah, 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 blah.
Let's post it, Mitch. Come on.
And then here's something you might not know. As recently as November 2017, in an interview with Revolver Magazine, Morbid Angel, which is a band, guitarist Trey Azergoth, whoever the hell that is, stated that the band's new album called Kingdom's Disdain is based on Thundar the Barbarian. The lyrics include, here's what he said, Thundar the Barbarian inspired the new album's title. Was that something, Kingdom's Disdain? Was that part of the show? I don't know what that is.
What is the name of it?
Kingdom's Disdain. Disdained.
Well, let me tell you this. I don't know. It could have been the title of one of the cartoons, because I'll tell you, the names, like Gerber was, you knew Gerber was right out of comic books. When you see like the titles, like This Train to Doomsday.
I have some of that. I just saw it. Last Train to Doomsday, Masters of the Stolen Doomsday, Trial by Terror, Prophecy of Peril.
Do me a favor, read all the titles for me.
All right, the very first one is called Secret of the Black Pearl.
Yeah.
Okay, that could be like Captain Jack. Harvest of Doom.
So good.
Mind Doc, the Mind Menace.
Kind of that's like a Kirby Menace character.
Raiders of the Abyss. Treasure of the Mox. Attack of the Amazon Women.
Yeah.
The Brotherhood of Night. Mm. Challenge of the Wizards. Mm-hmm. Valley of the Man-Apes.
Yep.
Stalker from the Stars. That's been used before. Portal into Time. Battle of the Barbarians. Sounds like something
that
Roy would do. Roy.
Yeah.
The Den of the Sleeping Demon. It sounds like Conan the Barbarian. Okay, now season two. Wizard Wars. Fortress of Fear. Island of the Body Snatchers. City of Evil. Last Train to Doomsday. Masters of the Stolen Sun Sword. Sword,
mm-hmm.
Trial by Terror, Prophecy of Evil, and that's how it ends. That's it.
And they wanted to keep going. First off, you look at those titles, you can see like the whole comic aspect. And plus, Rich, watch it. You'll see so much Kirby. You'll be like, oh my god, that's Kirby. Like that one with the Amazons. All those girls, like they look like something out of the Forever People and stuff, or like the New Gods. You can see. And how good was the villain Gemini that had the twisting fate? That was all Kirby.
Well, how scary is this? In the episode The Badlands, where the United States were actually the ruins of New York City, and in the background could be seen the skeletal remains of the Empire State Building and the World Trade Center. Ooh, that's kind of creepy.
And like that's what I said. Like when they go to a new place, you always see the background, and you can see they were very good to detail in that cartoon. I'm so disappointed the fact that you don't have that cartoon.
Oh, well, maybe today. I don't know. Now, did you know what TV show that came afterwards was inspired by Thundar the Barbarian?
It was a
ripoff of this show. No.
Inspired by it. What year did it?
1981, produced by Lou Schimmer and Norm Prescott of Filmation.
Would that be Black Star?
Yes, it is Black Star.
Yes, it is Black Star.
Black Star, an American animated television series, a sci-fi fantasy story which reported as being inspired by Thundar the Barbarian. It was produced in 1981 by Filmation. The series was Filmation's second fantasy epic, first being The Freedom Force, a segment of Tarzan and the Super Seven. Black Star was most notable similarities to He-Man, Masters of the Universe, which was produced shortly afterwards. John Blackstar, astronaut, is swept through a black hole into an ancient alien universe. Trapped on the planet Sagar, Blackstar is rescued by the tiny Trobit people. In turn, he joins their fight for freedom against the cruel overlord who rules the might of the Power Star. The Power Star is split into two, the Power Sword and the Star Sword. And so, with Star Sword in hand, Black Star, together with his allies, sets out on the planet to save Sagar. This is his destiny. I am John Black Star.
Yeah. And
what a ripoff. That is He-Man.
Yeah, well, once again, He-Man came after that. It was the same filmation guys doing that, but you can see the influence that that Thundar had, a lot of that. And if you look at Thundar, you can even see a little bit of He-Man in little Thundar and He-Man. They had like almost the same hair and stuff. Obviously, Thundar was more like Conan and Conan-esque, where He-Man was had more wisdom and he was more articulate. Thundar is like, it's a cult classic, and you want to know something, Mitch? It's a damn shame that property is still in limbo, because I'll tell you this right now, me and Keith Gleason, the promoter of Plastic City Comic Con, one of my good friends, we have talked for the last 10, maybe almost 20 years about how good of a movie would Thundar be, or a good comic book, or just like a serious take on Thundar. It'd be better than He-Man. Oh, it would be. There's so much more there.
Let's see, there's never been a Thundar the Barbarian comic. I'm going to look that up right now.
Nope. And if they did...
No, you were wrong, sir.
No. The cover. They did, but it was a little more toned down, though.
Yeah, Robert E. Harry, Cavalcade Comics, number 14. Commandy, I'm full prepared. Yeah, I don't know why there's not one. I'm looking at images here.
But even the movie would be like a serious take.
I stand corrected. I think these are fan-made things. These are not actual publications of a real Thundar comic book.
No, they had little mentions and stuff, but they were always toned down. Thundar would be a fantastic movie, a post-apocalyptic movie with like sword and sorcery. If we could develop Thundar, I would love to have Roy Thomas write it. How good would that be?
Wow, I don't know. What's going on here with this? I'm trying to find out why there is no Thundar.
No, it was just, me and Keith have been talking about this for years. It's such a hidden...
Yeah, but why? I mean, everything's come again. I mean, they do Star Wars all over again. They've done so much old stuff back again. Why can't somebody create a Thundar comic book?
Because they get kind of pushed aside by Space Ghosts and all those other characters, and so you don't really see them. And like I said, Thundar was kind of off by itself. Even Keith looked into trying to get the rights. This is no lie. Back in like the 90s, he tried to get the rights to see if he could maybe write Thundar.
Yeah.
Because Thundar is a property that's just waiting. I hope people recognize this after we talk about it, but Thundar was like Ben Cooper. I started the Ben Cooper craze back in 2005, and now there's a whole internet about it and everything, and I started that. The same should be said about Thundar. This is something, a property that is just a hidden gem that I have no idea why. They're trying to make a He-Man movie, you know that's going to kind of be a little iffy. You make a Thundar movie, that'll be a box office hit. Guaranteed.
Robert Ridgely, the voice of Thundar, also went on to be Boris the Hangman in Blazing Saddles, and reprised the role later on in the film Robin Hood, Men in Tights. Did you know that? I did not know that.
No, I didn't know.
Oh, did you know that one of the cast was voiced by Fred Flintstone great Henry Corden? Henry Corden was actually Fred Flintstone. He played Ookla the Muck. I did not know that. See, I'm reading some of the little-known facts about Thundar the Barbarian.
So, Mitch, in a later episode, what we're going to have to do is have your review on Thundar.
I remember the show. I watched it as well because, I mean, I didn't, like, buy the tape, but I just watched it when it came on every week, and I remember being drawn to it because of its comic book-like qualities. And,
right, but you got to have an open mind, though. I mean, you like give it to you.
I got a hole in my head, so, yes, an open mind is quite easily done, John.
No, but what I'm saying is you didn't see it at the time to really understand it, but because when you watch things today, you kind of see it out of context. Well, it ain't as good as this, this, and this. You got to remember what they were dealing with and that stuff, and you got to look at it in that. They're still strong stories, but they remind you of, like, comic, great comic, Conan comic sword and sorcery stories. I think you'll love it, but I would love to know what you think. But you have to watch all 21 episodes before you give me your review, all right?
All right, John. All right. Speaking of, like, comic books, I would be remiss if I did not mention today on January 16th that I am announcing another guest that will be joining the Cavalcade of Comic Book Creators in Connecticut this August at my show, Terrificon, the show that everybody loves. And who would that be, John, but the man who once was very rude to Mr. John Cimino, and I am bringing him to Connecticut so you can take your revenge upon this incident. John, tell us about what happened when you encountered Mr. Tony Isabella, writer and creator of Black Lightning.
Black Vulcan. I mean Black Lightning, yes, you're correct.
Also, he worked on The Champions, Hawkman, Ghost Rider, and many other books. But go on. What happened with you and Mr. Isabella?
It's going to be fun to see Tony at the show because I'll be with Roy, the guy who hired him and who's one of Tony Isabella's greatest idols. And now we're kind of on a different plateau here. Like, I can look at him like, hey. But when I was a kid, I saw Tony Isabella at a show. I cannot remember the show for the life of me. I don't know if it was in New York or something. It was many years ago. But he did the script of Incredible Hulk 172, in which, if anybody who knows Hulk lore out there, that was the Hulk fighting the Juggernaut. I think Roy and Archie Goodwin did the script, did the plot, and Tony Isabella did the finished script of it. And I remember Tony telling me he did it in a weekend. He had to finish it. He had a weekend to finish it. So he kind of just banged it out. So I asked him about that, like, who's, you know, the whole fanboy thing from where I come from. Who was stronger? Who would have won? And he might have been on a bad moon or something. But Tony, he looked at me and he said, "Who the hell cares?" And I was so taken aback. I was like, when you're a young kid and like the writers actually say it was such a letdown, I didn't say anything. And then I kind of like walked off and I was like, I was like, oh my God.
That's it? I mean, I thought there was going to be fisticuffs involved. You didn't throw down and beat the hell out of each other?
But like I said, I was just a young kid. I never really say. Like I said, he could have been having a bad day. But that pissed me off, and I still remember it. That must have been 20 some odd years ago, and I still remember it. And now I get my chance at Terrificon, and I'll see him with Roy, and I'm going to throw it right in his face when he yelled at me about that. And I want an apology. Because I was a little kid, I was so stunned. Like I said, he just snapped at me. Well, who the hell cares? Like that.
Well, you know, we've all had these transgressions with some of the great comic book creators of our time. I had an incident with Mr. Peter David with my son when he was a child. Peter David grabbed a Superman toy out of my son's hand and told him to stop fidgeting. And then I responded, "Hey, man, don't touch my kid." And there was almost, you know, almost a situation. But
Wait a second. Did you tell me that before?
I told you that before. We were in New York at Mike Carbo's show, and I had brought my kids. I don't know what I was thinking. I brought my kid. I don't know why the hell I brought my kids to Mike Carbo's show. Spencer had to be about 4, and Owen was still a baby. He was about 2, and Sharon was with me. We went to, maybe went to New York for, like, I don't know, to go to see a museum or something, and we went to see the comic show. We went in, and Peter David was there, and I can't remember who the artist was working on Green Lantern, but I went to see somebody. Maybe Stan Lee was there? I don't know. But Julie Swartz was there, famed DC editor-in-chief. Julie Swartz was there, and he was selling his autobiography for only $15. And what had happened is Spencer, my son at the time, I was holding him, had a cold, and it was in the winter months. It was December. And that's what it was. We must have gone to see the Christmas tree or something. And Spencer unfortunately sneezed on Mr. Julie Swartz. And, you know, I apologized. And what are you going to do, little kid? But Julie Swartz died of pneumonia a month later. And I kind of blamed the germs from my kid. But, you know, I've had incidents with the creators.
I've never been a fan of Peter David. I know he's a cranky guy. I hated his Hulk. So, I mean, I don't have any... I know he's always a guest at Terrificon.
He does. He comes in quite often. He's been a guest at least 4 times now that I think about it.
He's a cranky old guy, and he's got his quirks. Yeah. And I never, like I said, I never cared. But he actually grabbed the freaking toy out of
Yeah, it was a little... we sat somewhere in the basement, because I don't throw out anything. It was, you might even have them at the Raynham Flea Market booth A89 and 90 every week over in Massachusetts. It was this little Superman, and it had a white cup and would hold the cup. I don't know if it was given out at a like a food giveaway, maybe like a Burger King. So what it was a Superman cup holder. And Superman stood there with his arms out, and you put the little white plastic cup in it.
Yeah, I know what it is.
Okay. Yeah, that's what Spencer would carry with him. That was Baby Superman, he used to call it. And he used to always have it with him. And he would just hold on to it and play with it. And he had it in his hands when I was talking to Peter David about something. And, you know, Peter David reached across the table and grabbed my son's hands and told him to stop fidgeting with the toy. And I was like, hey, man, back off. Don't touch my kid or I'll pop you. So, and then years later, when Peter David was a guest here in Connecticut, my son at the time had to be about, maybe he was about 5'10", and Peter David's not that tall. And I brought Spencer over, and Spencer was playing defense on the lacrosse team. And I said, hey, you don't remember my son Spencer here, but when he was little, you grabbed his hands, and Spencer's standing there about this, you know, looks like the Hulk compared to Peter David's Bruce Banner. I was like, go ahead, try grabbing his hands now and taking something from him, see what happens to you. He's like, oh, jerk.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of Peter David. But
you don't grab someone's kids, okay? You don't touch them. Don't touch your kids.
Yeah, what Peter David. But, yeah, that was my...
We digress.
Yeah, we digress. It was my thing with Tony Isabella, and it's going to just be funny to see him, and I want to mention it to him. Like,
Wait a minute. Let's go back. We're going on a topic here for a second. What was the worst... I'll tell you my story in a second. What was the worst incident you ever had with a comic book creator? And if you don't want to name names, that's fine, but go ahead. Just, like, what was the worst incident?
The worst incident.
Yeah, like at a show or you just had that run-in with Tony Isabella, but that was minor. That was mild. What has been like the worst?
To be frank, quite frank with you, it wasn't a comic creator. It was a celebrity. The two celebrities that obviously my first meeting ever of Lou Ferrigno was a childhood hero. Seeing him and then seeing how he really was kind of devastated me. But I'll tell you, kind of a funny/bad interaction was with Gary Coleman in New York. I was with Keith and a few...
Wait a second. Was this at the New York Comic Con?
Yes.
Was when Gary Coleman was kind of in the back next to the Star Wars guys?
No, he was at a table. And
No. I had a run-in with Gary. We'll go on to your story, but there was a run-in with Gary Coleman and myself, and it was Gary Coleman was sitting next to Peter Mayhew, who played Chewbacca, this other kid who played young Boba Fett, and then right next to him was Gary Coleman. I had no idea who the seating chart was or why they were together, but you had the 7'3" tall man, Peter Mayhew, next to this little tiny young man, Gary Coleman, who had to be about, what was that, 3'8"?
Was he 3'5"?
Yeah, he was not that big, yeah. But anyway, I think it was the same show. But go on. What happened with you and Gary Coleman?
Okay, first off, I was with Keith, and we just put out our very first Hero Envy DVD, and I saw him. I'm like, no, you got to understand. I know he went through a lot of turmoil and a lot of turbulence his whole life, but I think he's the greatest child actor of all time, and I absolutely am a fan of his. I even have the Gary Coleman cartoon, and I watch it. The boy with the book and Halo. I loved Different Strokes.
You gotta get out more. You just have to get out more.
No, yeah. I loved him.
If you're sitting there in the basement watching Gary Coleman,
saw him, I'm like, oh my god, it's Gary Coleman. I got a little starstruck, and he was wearing moon boots. That was the funniest thing. You know those moon boots?
Yes, moon boots.
I was like, oh my god. I go to Keith. I go, oh my god, he's wearing.
Wait. He was wearing the moon boots at the New York show.
I swear to God, he had like these slack pants, and then he had the moon boots over the. I swear to God, and I was like. Oh my god, it's Gary Coleman. So I went up to him, and I was being serious, but like I said, he probably got heckled his entire life. And, you know, he does. So he's always on edge. So I just said, hey, Gary Coleman, I go, I'm a big fan of yours. I go, I'm glad to, it's an honor meeting you. And I go, I want to give you this. And he probably thought I'm just putting him on and I'm being, but I was so sincere. I swear to God, I was sincere. And I said, I want to give you this DVD because he goes, all right, yeah, thank you. He takes it, right? And he just throws it behind him and it clangs off the wall. And I looked at Keith, ask Keith, this is the most hilarious thing, and I look at Keith and I go, Gary Coleman just threw up. Because I knew he thought I was trying to put him on, but Mitch, I'm telling you here, and I'm telling all our millions and millions of listeners, I wasn't. I was sincere.
Wait a minute. Did you just say millions and millions of listeners?
Yeah.
Okay.
He just takes the DVD. He's like, thanks. And he just chucks it down. It's like he chucked my hat.
Wait a minute. Was that one of Grimlock's CDs?
No. It was the Hero Envy, when we used to make the movie shorts. The Hero, it was our first six episodes. It was just like an honor to give it to him.
Yeah.
And he just threw it like it was such, it was like yesterday's trash. And because like I said, he goes, yeah, okay, thank you. Because he thought I was putting him on. So that's the God honest truth. And God is my witness right now, and I know he's somewhere in the different strokes in the sky.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this right now. I was 100% sincere. And when I saw his moon boots, I loved every... He was wearing, once again, slacks, gray slacks, red moon boots, and a yellow sweater with like the collar over it.
Yeah. No, I was at that show. I think somewhere in my memory, there's a photograph of that.
Okay, we could have been, but Mitch, that's my interaction.
See, I can't think of Different Strokes without the actress also who's gone on, Dana Plato, who played the sister.
And then she got all bad in the Playboy, and then she died.
No, but the problem is I dated a girl. It was before my wife. I dated this girl, and I remember her telling me that. She's like, oh, people say I look like Dana Plato from Different Strokes. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know if that's really something to put on one's resume. You know, like that's a badge of honor. But because she would tell me that, every time I date her, I kept thinking, oh, I'm going out with Dana Plato. I'm not really with Dana Plato, but this effect that she brought that up, every time I hear Different Strokes or Gary Coleman references, I always think of this girl I dated, Lisa. And I had to break up with her one time because, honestly, you ever see somebody, like, the light hits their face in a certain way and they just look like, I don't know, they don't look like themselves. You know, you just somehow, your brain paints a portrait. Do you remember the movie Mask about Rocky Blyer, this kid who had this, like, elephant man disease?
So then she looked like...
No, yeah, he had that, like, swollen face, and I'm not making fun of the kid's, affliction, but he had this really swollen face and red hair. Cher was in the movie with Sam Elliott, you know the movie I'm talking about?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so anyway, and Lisa had red hair, and there was this one moment where, like, the light caught her in a certain way, and she looked with her face, like, kind of puffy one day. She kind of looked like the kid from Mask. And that, you know, that's not a romantic image to have in your
head. From Dana Plato to the Elephant Man. All
right, Mitch. Yeah, Dana Plato and the Elephant. He wasn't the Elephant Man. He was more like the misshapen boy. I don't know where I go. But is that so? That's your worst celebrity incident. I'm trying to remember the worst celebrity incident I ever had on, let me see. There's the famous Harrison Ford backwards photo I've taken with the camera aimed backwards. I took a picture of my eye in front of him. That was embarrassing. I've told that story before on this show, I'm pretty sure. I've told it so many times. Me and Harrison Ford. The worst incident. I don't know. I can't think of really. I know. Okay, I could tell this story. This is a comic book story. Years ago, I did a comic book called The Adventures of Mitch and Merle, and it was about my friend who became a lawyer, and we were in college. It was kind of like Jay and Silent Bob or Cheech and Chong without the dope. And this is before Jay and Silent Bob, so I've always had some issues with Kevin Smith stealing my brain. It was about, we would have bizarre adventures. I used to write it every week in college. It was a weekly strip, and I collected them, and I put them out in a book. And I did a comic book based on it, and you can see some of the artwork somewhere on my Facebook page. I have all the artwork. I used to write and draw it. So I took the book and I went to New York to a Comic-Con, and Howard Chaykin, Mr. Howard Chaykin of American Flag fame, was one of my favorite writer artists, okay? And he was going to be there because at the time there was a brand new company called Bravura. You remember that company?
Yeah.
It was him, I believe Jim Starlin. Yeah, Jim Starlin came over there with Dreadstar, and Chaykin was there, and a bunch of other creators. They had formed a new publishing title. That's when all these Image books were coming out. Everybody was doing their own company. So Chaykin was there, and I stood in line, and I waited to talk to him, and I had a sample of the book, and I had some portfolio stuff, and I wanted to get Howard's opinion because I wanted to know how one got an agent, how it got a publisher. This is before the internet, so you actually had to go and do your own research. So I'm standing in line. I'm waiting for my turn to come up. I get up there. Now, here's Howard Chaykin. Love Howard Chaykin. Thought he was fantastic. I don't know what I was drinking back then. So I show him the stuff, and he looks at it. He's fine. He's fair. You know, no criticism. And I start asking him questions about how you make money as an artist, how you make money as a writer, blah, blah, blah. So he said, listen. Are you trying to create this book and draw because of the love of the art, because you want to be an artist, because you have a God-given talent, and you want to just convey that, express that to the world, or are you looking to make a quick buck? I said, well, a little bit of both. You know, I'm trying to make an income. I just got married, and I'm trying to make a living here. And he goes, no, I can't talk to you. I said, why? He goes, because if you're not drawing or writing because of the love of the art within yourself, and you're just trying to make a quick buck in it, you are nothing more than a whore. And I went, whoa, what? He says, you're just taking your talent and you're putting it out on Front Street and you're putting a price tag on it and say, hey, everybody, pay me some money and I'll do what you want. He goes, you are nothing but a prostitute. You are just a whore. Now get away from me. I don't talk to whores. And I was like, whoa, what the hell, you know? And my wife at the time, I think Sharon, we were married then, or maybe she was my fiance, I don't remember. She said, geez, what an asshole. And Jake is like, well, I'm just telling it like I see it. And I was devastated. I was like, holy crap, that's like meeting your hero and your hero tells you you're a jerk. Or Gary Coleman throws your CD behind him and doesn't think twice about it. So I said, okay, you know, I'm trying to, you know, recoup. And I look, and Howard's got this line of people, and he's autographing this new comic book that was called Power and Glory. And he was signing it. And I said, wait a second, Mr. Chaykin, are you here to sign in these comic books that you wrote? He's like, yeah, you buy a comic book and I sell it. I go, oh, how much is the comic book? He says, oh, it's like $2. I said, oh, okay, so we know how much your price is, whore. And he started screaming at me, get out, get away from me. And I walked out, and there in the elevator, I walk out, and there's Mike Mignola, who just had a brand new baby girl. I think she was only a couple months old. And I was there talking to him, and he's, hey, who are you? And I'm like, I just came down from Connecticut, and I wanted to meet, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Mignola, of all people, like I said, he was a young guy. Hellboy had just come out. And he's talking to me. He's like, you know what? Don't be discouraged. You know, who's Howard Chaykin? What are you worried about him for? You know, you're never going to see that guy again. Go out and do what you want. But little Mitchie was discouraged, and I did not pursue the world of comic book publisher maker. I did not produce that comic book. But lo and behold, years later, I would encounter Howard Chaykin on an interview for the IndieCast podcast, and I told him that story. He said, before we go into this, I have two people on my hate list, Adolf Hitler and Howard Chaykin. And depending on the day, it goes back and forth between who's first and who's second. And I told Chaykin this story, and he goes, I have no knowledge of that incident. I go, well, you told me, and it was in front of Jimmy Palmiotti and a bunch of other people. He says, listen, man, I used to do a lot of cocaine back then. I have no idea. I was on drugs. So he just dismissed it. And when he was a guest at Terrificon this year, he had such a good time. We had fun and this and that. He still feels regret for being mean to me that time. And whenever his birthday comes up, if you ever go on Facebook, I will wish him happy birthday, and I always sign it, the Whore Master.
So, Mitchie, yes, you think this loop between me and Tony Isabella?
You want to have a fight with him? What about it?
No. You think there's hope? There's hope that we can rekindle, like we can become friends?
I'm going to run. We'll have a panel with Tony, and I want you to get up, and I want you to blurt out who you are and tell him that incident. And see if he recalls it. Much like you and Kurt Busiek talking about how he made McDonald's hamburgers for you when he worked in Massachusetts 30 years ago.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I was so young. Yeah.
I don't think they'll recall. I don't know. So that's that. The Terrificon has become the kind of revenge where we just put it on every year just to push it in other people's faces. Lo, that would not be a good reason to do with a show, would it now, John?
Yeah. And we'll just tell people in closing of this podcast that we got a lot of surprises for people this terrific con, right, Mitchie?
Oh, yes. And people might, if they know me, why I obsess about guests, why I obsess about who's coming, what are we going to do, what's the theme of the show. And it's, let me tell you, and John knows this from personal experience because he hears me every single day. Every day we talk about the show and text each other. That's because we care. And it's not a bunch of bullshit or malarkey. We care about this show so much. Maybe that's why people enjoy it. Because you can't fake it. You can't say, oh, I'm one for the people and I'm doing a show because you people demand it and this and that. No, you really got to pour your heart and soul in it. And I think if you do this, music, acting, drawing, whatever it is, it shows. I think people can feel the passion and understand it. Do you, John, think that's what the differentiation is between me and some other shows?
Of course, because we're fans. We put on a show that we would want to see. And we got to admit, Mitch, me and you and a lot of our friends, we're the pulse of the industry. We're like those we love this. We live, breathe, and die by this thing, you know. And some people look at this stuff and they just see it's like a character, or it's really our life's blood. It kind of defined who we are our entire lives. It was like our religion, you know. And so we go to these shows where that we want people to interact with the creators, have a good time. And let's be honest, every creator that's been going there always wants to come back. Henceforth, Mr. Roy Thomas, he wants to come back every year.
Roy Thomas has been made the official permanent guest of Terrific Con. As long as it's
he's the Irving Furbish of Terrific Con.
He is. We can't get rid of him. He's going to be running around with that pot on his head, you know, and that red suspenders.
Well, and he even told me that when he came last year, he said that he came the year before, 2 years prior to that, but he came last year, and he said that was one of the most fun shows he's ever been to. And I said, I know. Same thing with Englehart. He said the same thing. Marv Wolfman told me, too, that he had such fun there. Why? Because there's a love there. We cater to these guys, but they know that it's a show made from, like, the heart. And they can feel that, Mitch. People feel that.
And let me tell you, I do put the reins on just going, I don't want to sell out and just start grabbing big-name guests just to fill the seats and go, hey, if I get so-and-so from a certain movie or a TV show or a rock star or something, that'll bring in tens of thousands of people. Because deep down at its core, that's not what Terrificon's about. And, you know, I don't want to become a phony. So...
Exactly. Well, case in point, you'll also notice this, that we keep rates down from...
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I could jack these things up and make a quick buck, but I just couldn't sleep with myself at night.
But see, those are some things people don't recognize, but they understand. When they come to our show, they're like, you know, yeah, look at the deals that are out there with other big shows. There's not many deals. You're going to be paying a lot of money. Even for some smaller shows, you see the price ranges are crazy.
No, I know. I've gone to some shows, and I go, how much was that to get in? They go, $35, $40. I go, am I missing something here? Are you kidding me?
And one more thing, Mitch. We do an old-school formula. An old school formula, which is basically new school today. What I mean by that is, if you look at the model of shows, it's all these major top heavy celebrities, and who cares about the comics and the vendors, and who cares about the creators too? They're always in the back burner. You'll notice our show is like an old school show where we celebrate all the creators. Yeah, we have a few celebrities here and there, but it's mostly the core comic people, because we're probably, I want to know, shows that are our size, that are, how many in America are left like that? Where's that? You don't hear that.
I'm going to say there's three on the East Coast that I know about. Heroes Con in North Carolina, fantastic show. Baltimore Comic Con, that's in September in Baltimore, obviously. And then Terrific Con. That's about it.
And then on a smaller scale, we'll have to throw in Plastic
City.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Our Plastic City Comic Con. Absolutely, yeah. I was just taken back by a little bit because the TV's on in the next room. The sound is off, but I'm staring at my morning, love, Savannah Guthrie. Oh, Savannah Guthrie. Oh, anyway.
Okay, easy. Take it easy. But isn't
love
it,
that
isn't
big,
it
lanky,
funny?
Tall.
Isn't it funny? But, Mitch, isn't it funny that you can only count on one hand, how many shows are kind of like that now? I mean, it's crazy. Like, yeah. How this is not like a...
Because that used to be the norm. Years ago, in the 70s and 80s, comic book conventions were few and far between. They'd maybe one a year if you were lucky. One a year in your area. Or you had to drive like 200 miles to go to a decent one. Not like the VFW hall guys with a cigar box taking a buck out of your hand to go in. I'm talking about a real comic show with artists. You'd have to go to New York. You know, that's about it. And you know, and they weren't like they are now. They had maybe like a couple thousand people. But it wasn't a mob scene with, you know, 100,000 people. There was no movie stars at those shows back then. Because you got to remember, when we were growing up, if you were doing a comic book convention or any sci-fi convention, you were an actor, you pretty much were putting it out there that your career was over, right?
Yep.
And you could not work. It was not looked at as a badge of honor to be doing a convention. It was more of a disgrace, like, oh, he can't work anymore. Isn't that sad, you know? But that's not the industry we live in now, buddy. That's, you know, superhero movies. Look at the superhero movie. When we were a kid, those were the laugh of Hollywood. That was a laughing stock. That was like a piece of crap that you wouldn't do. That's why they were so bad. Now that's the $1 billion industry, superhero movies. You know,
and now it's pop culture, too.
It's pop culture. Everything. Ugh, it's unbelievable. So we lived in very interesting times, how it's shifted from nothing to... The big deal.
So in this new age, we keep that old school mentality and put on a good old school quality show.
Yeah, we do. So anyway, Thundar the Barbarian, then we talk about revenge meetings with creators and Gary Coleman, and I still stare at Savannah Guthrie. What a morning it's been so far, Johnny. And of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention one more time, let's say happy birthday to your friend and mine. What's his name, John?
I think his name is Scott Martin.
Scott the Stalker Martin. That's right. Monroe County's premier law enforcement agency or agent. All right.
Happy birthday, Scotty.
Happy birthday, Scott. Ariel Ukla, ride. Maybe that's how we'll end the shows from now on. No more... That's that. Or should we just stick with that's that?
Yeah,
let's just go with that's the IE. That sounds bad. Is it really IE?
It's yeah.
I might go today and just buy that. It's probably on YouTube. I don't even have to buy it. I bet somebody's bought all the episodes.
You gotta buy it. You got to.
All right, I'm going to go buy Thundar the Barbarian. And maybe next week...
Remember this, to throw this out there, and lastly, one of the great theme songs of a cartoon ever. Like, it's just so good. Like, even the ending credits. Dun, 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 dun,
dun. It was metal. Is that what you're saying? Had a heavy metal beat to it?
It's awesome. It's just awesome. Watch it.
All right, we're gonna start a campaign to bring back Thundar the Barbarian.
We'll try. All right, Mitch, and how do we end it?
And that's that.
That's that.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.